Just before we move on the issue of Darren Turn, we were due to have a listener on the programme in the first hour, but there was no answer when we called about the layout of the village. And Teresa Kennedy has just been in touch to say the new layout in Darren Turn is a pure disaster. High curbs, no parking for mass goers, school drop-offs or chemist, the barbers and the physio. The road is narrow now, so for up to 500 pupils attending the school, it will be highly dangerous. We'll be following up on that over the next few days. And if you live in the Darren Turn Carberry area, do get in touch with us on your views on it. But moving on for the moment, and the shelling of Europe's largest nuclear power plant in Ukraine is a crime against humanity, Irish anti-nuclear campaigner Aidy Roach has said. The Zaporizhia plant in southern Ukraine has been hit by a series of bombardments over recent days, with Ukrainian and Russian forces blaming each other for the attacks. In the most recent incidents, a worker of the plant was wounded by Russian shells and some radiation monitoring sensors were damaged. The bombardments also led to one of its reactors being shut down. Aidy Roach is the CEO of Chernobyl's Children's Project International. She's on the line now. Good morning, Aidy.
Good morning, Owen. Good morning.
From these shellings, containers of spent fuel, which is highly radioactive, were also damaged, and we run the risk of a very, very serious situation unfolding here.
Yes, we do, because unfortunately, what has happened there with the damage of not the radiation monitoring sensors, which they can no longer detect escalating radiation levels. They can't detect if there are any leakages of radiation. And this is critical at a nuclear power station. And really, it's the stress on, and this is kind of an area that people haven't really got that engaged with. We're more concentrated on the possibility of the shelling and, you know, the stray bullets and an explosion happening that way. But, like, we also need to focus on the poor workers that are there. Like, working in a nuclear power station in peace times, in normal times, is actually a very stressful, very serious job. And working in the situation that these guys are in Zaporizhia, they're working under the oppressor, as in Russia. They're working in extreme conditions, and there is huge difficulties in getting food, water into them. And also, there's the possibility of human error when people are working under stress, mental breakdown, the risk of malfunction, the psychological impact. And really, I suppose, on the bottom line here is the danger of any nuclear power station is that they have this potential to be used as a weapon of war. So this isn't just an urgency or an emergency for Ukraine, but actually for Europe and the world. It could have potentially catastrophic consequences. And like, what's different about this, Owen, is because nuclear power has been around, you know, since 1945. But what's different now is this war has changed the nature of modern warfare as we know it. Always and ever, off limits, no matter what war you pick anywhere in the world that has gone on, a nuclear power facilities have been exempt from war until the Russians invaded Ukraine and took over the nuclear power station in Chernobyl and all of the land there. And they went from there down to Zaporizhia, the biggest one in Europe. Now, this says something very serious to us, that, you know, any nuclear reactor in the hands of an aggressor, could be anywhere else in the world, really poses a huge international danger. And therefore, Owen, it is of primary importance that our Minister for Foreign Affairs, our Taoiseach, Micheál Martin, that they actually try and get the international community to invoke the regulation that already exists, actually, which is the Hague Convention, where the Hague Convention defines that any attack or use of a nuclear facility is a war crime. So that's the first thing. The second thing, we've got to get a negotiation going for withdrawal from the reactor site. The Russians have to get their war paraphernalia out. They have to stop the shelling, and the Ukrainians have to stop on the other side, because we were able to negotiate peacefully the grain agreement, which is a small chink in the armour, which is wonderful, to stop people from starving around the world. Surely, when the whole of humanity is at stake, we could negotiate a pullback and to have this area declared a no-war zone.
Aidy, just explain to us the current status of the Zaporizhia plant then. Whose control is it under at the moment? But also, what about Chernobyl? Because that was in the news at the very start of the invasion. You know, there was a lot of concern when the Russians took over Chernobyl. It seemed to fade into the background a little bit then, you know, when so much was happening. But what is the current situation with those two nuclear power plants?
Okay, two very good questions. To come to the first one about the status of Zaporizhia, it's a strange one. It's under occupation by the aggressor, okay, without a shadow of a doubt, since March. So the Russians are on site with about 500 soldiers there. As far as we can determine, there's an awful lot of war paraphernalia there. They may be potentially using it as a cover, you know, for their war activities. But who's operating the plant? This is what is so bizarre. This has never happened anywhere in the world, so we have no template to call on or experience of what's going to happen. The workers in the plant, because they're highly, highly skilled nuclear engineers, because you're dealing with very volatile, fragile radioactive material. It's highly specialised. It's being run by the Ukrainian specialists. But it's the Russians are in charge. So the Ukrainian authorities, the Ukrainian nuclear agency, they don't even know what is the situation there. They can no longer monitor because that got wiped out. And then there was a tit for tat blaming of each other on both sides. I would say plague on both your houses about this, because they have knocked out the monitoring sensors. And that means if this becomes like a runaway, situation in Zaporizhia, there will be nobody able to detect the levels of radioactivity to even alert people that there has been alert. I mean, this is really, really serious. If we cannot monitor, we will not know, because radiation by its nature is invisible. You can't see, taste or touch it. No. And therein lies the tale. And coming back to Chernobyl.
Just, we'll get to Chernobyl in a moment, Aidy, because I think you raised an important point there that, you know, when I heard it, I thought it was incredible. So, though it and much of the territory around Zaporizhia is captured by Russian forces, or has been captured by Russian forces in March, it's still being staffed by Ukrainian technicians and workers. So just imagine that they're going into work every day. You've the Russian army have taken over this plant, but Ukrainians are still working inside it.
Correct. And actually, Owen, I'm not sure if they get to leave the site.
Really?
Because if we're going, and this is where I'm really worried about the psychological state of these guys, because we know from what happened when they occupied Chernobyl, they had them, they were hostages. All of the staff, the expert staff, the technical, the scientists, the engineers, all of the technical people, they were never allowed to leave, and they ran out of water and food. They were dehydrated, they were starving. And these were the guys that were in charge of minding the tonnage of radioactivity and the radioactive material in Chernobyl. People feared mostly for what would happen in the event of psychological breakdown. What happens when you bring somebody over a prolonged period? They're only sleeping on the ground. They're terrible conditions, because normally the working day of somebody working at a nuclear power station is quite short because of the seriousness and the gravity of what they're working with and the pressure it puts on people mentally. So they have short working days. But since the takeover of Zaporizhia, we reckon that the workers are the same workers. There may be some relief, at times, but not very much. And they're a small band of highly skilled personnel. There wouldn't be that many of them around. So they are probably doing almost 24-hour shifts in extreme circumstances under the barrel of a gun. I mean, they are looking down the barrel of a gun all day. If they look out the window, they see the military activities. They see the paraphernalia that's been brought in by the Russians. They see the shelling. They hear the shelling. And they know that what they are the keepers of has a potential for Armageddon. And, like, this is the biggest facility, nuclear facility, in the whole of Europe. And it's just, may God help us all if something goes wrong. We've got to prevent it, Owen. Like, you know, the old doctor's dictum, prevention is the only cure. And I come from that school of thought. We have got to make sanity prevail. Because if we are silent, if we do nothing, well, you know, well, then we get closer to this reaching a critical mass situation. We cannot allow that to happen. We cannot. We are here in the wings watching, because this will not just impact the immediate areas of Russia and Ukraine and Belarus, the nearest other neighbour. No, this is like has European and global potential on, and that's why it's really important that we're talking about this morning. And I mean, I'm very conscious that your listeners, this is probably the last things that they need to hear about on this day, you know, when we're so conscious of so many other things around us in our world today. And the war today is itself so difficult to grasp the daily reality of what the Ukrainians are going through. But this is almost suicidal. Like, I was listening to the Secretary General of the United Nations, Guterres, and I was so glad that he started to use the language he did last night to try and wake up the leaders of the world. He said, this is suicidal. These are suicidal strikes. Imagine striking. They're striking across like a nuclear reactor. This has never, ever, ever happened before since the dropping of the bomb on Hiroshima and Nagasaki. And Owen, I'm talking to you today, the 9th of August, which is the anniversary of the dropping of that bomb on Nagasaki in 1945. And like, people, over 100,000 people, were incinerated from that nuclear attack. One weapon. And the anniversary is today. And that's why, you know, I was very moved by the Undersecretary General's words from Hiroshima at the weekend on the 6th of August, which was the marking of the dropping of the bomb, when again, like, you know, hundreds of thousands of people were incinerated. When he said, we must ask ourselves the question, what have we learned from the mushroom cloud that swells above Hiroshima?
Yeah.
This is such a question for today with what's happening in Zaporozhye.
Yeah, it's very, very timely that we're talking to you on this anniversary, as you say, Aidy. At the weekend, Mariano Grossi, he's the head of International Atomic Energy Agency, he said he was extremely concerned by the latest outbreaks near the Zaporozhye plant. He said the very real risk of a nuclear disaster that could threaten public health and the environment in Ukraine and beyond, for the sake of protecting people in Ukraine and elsewhere from a potential nuclear accident, we must all set aside our differences and act now. Before we let you go, Aidy, back to Chernobyl then, what's the current situation there?
Well, the current situation is, when the International Atomic Energy Agency finally got in there, it was after the withdrawal from Chernobyl, which, well, of course, we breathed a sigh of relief afterwards, but the aftermath is horrendous on the elevated levels of radioactivity, because there was so much tank movement, war paraphernalia, movement of thousands of troops, etc. They absolutely unbalanced the very delicate radiation in the Chernobyl exclusion zone, which is a vast area, and they re-released tonnage of radioactivity that I don't know if we'll ever actually get to measure it, to be honest, because that's what they did in Chernobyl as well. They knocked out the sensory equipment. So for a number of weeks, we had no idea how much radioactivity was being released. And like, that was being inhaled, ingested. People were sleeping, eating and breathing in that environment, because thousands of people live in that area. And we've been trying to get food, trying to get water into these people, because they are suffering from what we call the double war, the second war, which is the invisible war of Chernobyl. They left it, they looted, they went mayhem around the reactor site. They broke lots of really specific, delicate monitoring equipment. They looted everything. They set things on fire. And they really, really, really brought the world to the brink of a nuclear accident by their act. It is only just by the luck of God that actually nothing did, in fact, happen, other than there is radioactivity being released, but we didn't have a massive explosion there. But that potential was there. They used it, Owen, as a weapon of war. This has never happened before. This is actually really shocking. It should be front page news from the first days of the war, what they did in Chernobyl, because then they went on and they decided they would take over the biggest nuclear power station in Europe, almost as just to show that they could.
Yeah.
That this is extraordinary. We are all so fragile and so vulnerable as because of that act, and therefore we must invoke the Hague Convention, and we must get them, as Mr. Grossi said in his statement, and thank God he made that statement, we have to declare this a no-war zone. This is for humanity. This is for humanity.
I think it's very important talking to you this morning, Aidy, and, you know, just explaining the situation, what's happening in Ukraine, and explaining the gravity of it. And thanks indeed for taking the time out to talk to us on the programme. That is Aidy Roach, CEO of Chernobyl Children's Project International. Good morning to you, Aidy.
Thank you.
Kildare Today.
With Whitewater Shopping Centre Newbridge, Ireland's largest regional shopping centre. Fashion, food, film, all under one roof in the heart of Newbridge. WhitewaterSC.ie. Kildare
KFM. Okay, still to come between now and 11 o'clock, we'll have that tribute to Olivia Newton-John, who passed away yesterday at the age of 73. That is coming up in the next few moments. Also, some water safety advice if you're using the water during the current hot spell in light of recent drownings. And we'll get to some of your messages as well. But let's go to Kira in the newsroom.
Yes, and I'm joined now by Owen Corrie. He's the editor of Air and Travel magazine. Good morning to you, Owen.
Good morning, Kira.
So, Kildare, this county has the seventh highest number of people who are awaiting their passport applications to be processed in the whole country. And I was speaking to somebody the other day who tried to get their child at the age of 17 a new passport. And obviously it costs a little less when you're paying for a child. And in the time since, that person has turned 18. So it means now that they were sent back the details after about 5 months of it supposedly, you know, going through the system. And they're now going to have to pay again for an adult's passport, which obviously is what they need at this age, but they applied while the person was a child.
Yeah, getting timed out on lots of issues is a big drama. One of the other dramas is that your passport has to be renewed from the beginning if you have let it expire by 5 years. That wouldn't happen that often, but certainly when people were 3 years without travel during COVID, passports, family member passports expired. And you, the one place you do not want to be at the moment is at the beginning of that cycle that you mentioned there, Kira.
So people like me, I think my passport is out of date next April. When can I get into the system? Is it best to wait a couple of months? Is it best to apply now? Because people are confused about that.
The renewal process, Kira, is so simple and so fast that it's actually muddying the debate a little bit. Things have got a little bit better for that terrible first-time applicant process, but certainly the online renewal is, it's really working well. People are talking about it's supposed to be 10 days. People are saying it comes back very quickly. It can come back in 2 or 3 days. A very important thing to watch is that you don't let it to the run to the end of your cycle. There's some countries you need 6 months before your passport runs out. There aren't that many, but some of them are important holiday destinations out of Ireland. Morocco would be an example, and Turkey would be an example. Within the EU, it doesn't really matter if your passport is clocking in the next 6 months, but there are countries where it does. So good idea to start that process 7 or 8 months before your passport runs out, your existing passport runs out.
So here to start 7 or 8 months before the passport runs out?
To get a new one before you run into a situation that your existing passport has less than 6 months to run.
Okay.
And that process, the online, they put up, you send your picture, the machine verifies the photograph, sees if it's okay, then it goes into the process, a legal eye, trained eye, looks at the photograph again. Sometimes the machine verifies it and they say that's not good enough, send us another one. But generally, most of them are going through very quickly. Now, the real process is that the whole thing of newborn babies are people, for instance, who have let their passport run out for 5 years.
So the 55,000 or over 55,000 people that are waiting for the passport, are you saying by and large are falling into those categories?
By and large, 195,000 was the figure at the beginning of June. So let's face it, they have cleared a lot of the backlog. The real drama was with the Garda verification. The process of locating the Garda that had signed the form and witnessed the documents had broken down. There's no other word for it. People from the passport office were telephoning Garda stations to find that the guard wasn't on duty till next Tuesday, or in some cases he'd been through, you know, he'd moved or been promoted, and the whole process was thrown into limbo again. It wasn't the only choke point, but it was one of the more important choke points in the whole system. And they have taken measures to have some sort of official channels of communication with the Garda Síochána corner, so that the locating of Gardaí that they would have difficulty locating, they would get help with that. There isn't a process where they liaise directly with the Garda stations at the moment, but they're tackling that choke point. And to be quite honest, Ciara, that it was the single biggest choke point, delaying those first time applications. Another big problem. It would sit on somebody's desk. They would look at it, say, "Oh, there's a document missing." Generally, you know, you need parents' documents, birth certs, passports, things like that. And then they'd send it back. So the whole process would begin from the beginning again. And they've been under pressure to actually verify the documents and then put it in the pile, rather than the other way around.
Okay, so the average online renewal times, you've said, for adult passports are around 10 days. Now, the average time for an online child renewal is 15 days. But people need to be, I guess, extra aware when they are applying with child documents, Owen.
Absolutely. A children's passport is a very sensitive document. Child's passport is a very sensitive document. Travelling with a child is a very sensitive issue. When you have differences of surnames, things like that, all of those have to be taken into account. So, the official guide time is 2 weeks for a renewal of a passport. A lot of them are coming back a little bit earlier than that, and 3 weeks for a child's passport. That tends to run out to take the 3 weeks.
Okay, Owen, I've just gotten a WhatsApp in here on 0833 97 97 97. That is how you can get in contact with the station. And Michael in Clane has gotten in touch. He has said this morning, "Hi, Ciara, interesting piece on the passports. Also worth thinking of is how many pages left. Unlikely to be a problem for holiday goers, but I have travelled so much, I ended up with 5 years left of the passport, but no blank pages left, and some countries require a minimum of 4 to 6 pages. Have you heard of this, Owen?
Very much. A full blank page, very rarely that they look for 4 to 6, but a full blank page on places, not obscure places either, Ciara, places that a lot of people go. South Africa demands a full blank page. I've had people turn back in Amsterdam, having flown to get their connection to South Africa.
Turned
not
back.
Singled out.
Oh my
not
God.
Not singled out board. And it's actually the check-in desk that they look for this. It's not, they don't wait to get you to immigration. They'll actually check at the check-in desk if your passport is going to be accepted, because the airline gets fined if somebody arrives in a country with an incorrect passport or with incorrect visas. And that one, the one country, the most, like 43,000 or pre-COVID 43,000 Irish people a year went to South Africa, and they do look for that full blank page. Some of the other countries demand 2, but they tend not to be places large numbers of Irish people go. But do keep an eye on that, and always keep an eye on your American visa as well. You know, your ESTA will get you in and into Canada, but if you need an American visa, which a lot of people do for work purposes, business purposes, all of that, that page is vital as well.
And Owen, just finally, another text in here from Joe. Passports, he says, are a joke. They applied in May online and they paid for it. Their 18-year-old is still waiting. June, July, now August, no passport yet.
No idea there, but what tends to happen if there's a 3-month delay. It tends to be that the documentation has been sent back, or, as I said, the difficulty getting verification from Garda, who witnessed documentation.
Okay, listen, thank you very much for your time this morning.
Always a great pleasure, Ciara. Take care.
You too, Owen. That is Owen Curry, editor with Air and Travel magazine.
Kildare Today.
With Whitewater Shopping Centre Newbridge, Ireland's largest regional shopping centre. Fashion, food, film, all under one roof in the heart of Newbridge. WhitewaterSC.ie.
Welcome back to the programme. Now, as you will have heard, it's been in the news since yesterday evening. Olivia Newton-John has died at the age of 73. The British-born singer died peacefully at her ranch in Southern California on Monday morning, surrounded by family and friends. The entertainer, whose career spanned more than 5 decades, devoted much of her time and celebrity to charities after being diagnosed with breast cancer in 1992. In a statement posted on Instagram, her husband John Easterling wrote, "We ask that everyone please respect the family's privacy during this very difficult time. Olivia has been a symbol of triumphs and hope for over 30 years, sharing her journey with breast cancer." Newton-John was born in Cambridge, England, to Welshman Professor Bryn Newton-John and his German-born wife Irene, who was the daughter of Nobel Prize-winning physicist Max Born. She was the youngest of 3 children. She moved with her family to Melbourne when she was 5. Newton-John is best known for her starring role in the 1978 film Grease, in which she starred opposite John Travolta as Sandy. Her performance saw her nominated for multiple awards, including 2 Golden Globes and various other film accolades. Writing on Instagram, Travolta said that her impact was incredible and signed off his tribute to the actress as "Your Danny." He says, "My dearest Olivia, you made all our lives so much better. Your impact was incredible. I love you so much. We will see you down the road and we will all be together again. Yours from the first moment I saw you and forever. Your Danny, your John." Sit back, relax and enjoy this trip down memory lane, a bit of nostalgia of the best of Olivia Newton-John.
Hi, Sandy.
Oh, hi, Riz. Hi, girls.
We got a surprise for you.
Surprise? What is it?
You'll see.
Hi. Right, Riz?
It's just coming here now.
Oh, my God.
Hey, so cool.
I got a surprise for you.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
Sandy!
Danny?
What are you doing here? I thought you were going back to Australia.
We had a change of plan.
I can't...
Well, that's cool, baby. I mean, you know how it is. Rocking and rolling and whatnot.
Danny?
That's my name. Don't wear it out.
What's the matter with you?
What's the matter with me, baby? What's the matter with you?
Yeah. What happened to the Danny Zuko I met at the beach?
Well, I do not know. I mean, maybe there's 2 of us, right? Why don't you take out a missing persons ad or try the yellow pages? I don't know.
You're a fake and a phony, and I wish I'd never laid eyes on you.
Whoa. Hi, Sandy.
Oh, hi.
How are you?
Fine, thanks.
That's good. Hey, Sandy, I've been wanting to talk to you for a long time now.
And what about?
Well, about that night at the bonfire. I mean, the way I acted, that was terrible. I mean, it really was. I mean, it wasn't me. You gotta know that. I mean, it was me, of course, but it wasn't me. You see, Sandy, I got this image, right? I got this.
Well, that's
image.
Why I'm so glad that Tom's such a simple person.
Simple is right. Too bad his brains are in his biceps.
Jealous, are you?
Jealous? Oh, come on, Sandy. Don't make me laugh. Ha, ha, ha.
But what have you ever done?
Oh, come on. I can run circles around those jerks.
I'll believe that when I see it. Danny, are you all right? Danny, talk to me. The least you can do is talk to me after the way you treated me.
The way I treated... Sandy, I told you I was sorry about that.
Yeah, got you talking. You sure you're okay?
Yes, I'm fine. So you're still going out with that jockstrap?
Well...
Well, is he taking you to the dance?
Well, that all depends.
On what?
On you.
On me?
Yeah.
He can stab you.
My parents want to invite you out for tea on Sunday. Do you want to come?
I don't like tea.
You don't have to drink tea?
Well, I don't like parents. Sandy, would you wear my ring?
Danny, I don't know what to say.
Say yes.
Yes. Oh. Oh, Danny, this means so much to me. Because I know now that you respect me.
Summer loving had me a blast.
Summer loving happened so fast.
I met a girl crazy for me.
Met a boy cute as can be.
Summer days drifting away to another summer night.
Little tribute to Olivia Newton-John, who has passed away at the age of 73, and hopefully enjoyed that and brought back some memories to you. We were dancing around the studio in here in KFM. Fantastic movie, Grease, 1978. Kira's giving me a look. Why are you
well,
looking?
I was dancing. I don't know what you were doing.
I was kind of moving.
It was some weird movement. I know you were dancing.
Listen, we're going to be talking to Water Safety Ireland in a moment. Advice for those using the water during the current hot spell, but also Also, Irish Water have been in touch because I believe there's risk of perhaps water shortages in some parts of the country, as we touched on in the newspaper review, but you've been in touch with them in the last hour or so.
Yeah, I have, and they did note to me if there are any further developments, they'll be in touch, obviously, and more than happy to provide a spokesperson also on the station. So the 13 areas they have as of right now, and I believe I should have an update in the next few minutes, and I will bring you that as well just before you go off air. But it's three places in Wexford, two places in Kilkenny, Bunclody also in Wexford, so a fourth place in Wexford there. Then in Laois, it's Swan WTP, then Limerick, Cork, Galway, Cork, Clare and Cork. So the vast majority, they say, of Irish Water's 750 water treatment plants continue to meet the demand for water supply, and they would like to thank the members of the public for their responsible use of water, but they're asking everybody to continue to take some simple steps to conserve water, of course, to ensure supplies are healthy into late summer and early autumn. So some tips they have on taking shorter showers, fixing drips or leaks in taps, toilets, etc. When brushing your teeth or shaving, turn the water off. Minimise the amount of water used in paddling pools. If you're washing the car, use a bucket and sponge instead of the hose. And if you need to report any external leaks to Irish Water, of course, they want you to do so. The number 1800 278 278, and they also have some advice on for when you're in the garden, you know, saving and reusing water collected from the bath, showers and using them in the garden. If you can get one of those big barrel things for your drains that the rainwater collected can go into, you can use that for watering the plants, etc. And then farm advice is things like, you know, save the water when cleaning the yard by using the dry cleaning techniques, clean the plate cooler water, consider rainwater harvesting, take action to protect your water services, avoiding contamination. And there's lots more advice on their website, water.ie/conservation.
Yeah, and as we mentioned there as well, with high temperatures forecast across the country for the coming week, many will be hitting the beaches for a cool down swim. Most years, August is the month with the highest number of accidental drownings, and almost 80% are men. And as we have mentioned, and it's been, you know, well documented on national media, Thursday's tragic events in Ballybunion were the latest in a string of water-related deaths. And Roger Sweeney, Water Safety Ireland Acting CEO, is on the line with some water safety advice. Good morning to you, Roger, and welcome to the programme. And I suppose to start off, and something that we always say when we're talking about water safety advice is, it doesn't matter how competent a swimmer you are, you must still remain vigilant when going for a swim.
Absolutely, Owen, and good morning to you and listeners. I think it's a great time to be talking. I mean, literally just before 11 o'clock, because I think a lot of people will be just about heading out now to get to the beaches and the rivers and lakes, and it's no harm reminding them about some of the scenarios that we see every year, year in, year out, and that includes people letting children going unaccompanied. And when you say competent swimmers, sometimes parents and guardians think that it's okay to let a competent older child look after the younger children at a river and lake, and that's when difficulties can arise, you know, thinking that they have the competence, but they may not have the life-saving skills that they need, you know. So that's very important, you know, if you are listening and you're about to go out and hit one of these beaches, rivers or lakes, just remember, don't leave an older child in charge of younger siblings, even if you think that they are good swimmers. And of course, you know, with the warmer weather, you can't blame people in wanting to rush to get to the water, but sometimes I think they don't always think about what they need to know before they go. So before you go, just stop for a second and just draw that virtual line in your head, draw that line in the sand, and just assess the risk before you go, and just think about, you know, have you packed an inflatable toy? Well, take it back out, don't bring it to the water, because a breeze, the slightest breeze, can take it out, you know, a rip current at the beach can take it away. And of course, as well as that, if somebody gets into difficulty when they're out and that goes for rivers and lakes as well as beaches, if they get into difficulty, somebody may make an effort to try and save that person, and that's when a scenario can unfold, and we've had tragic consequences as a result in the past. So older siblings, don't leave them in charge. When we say supervision, we mean constant, responsible adult supervision. And Owen, you mentioned about the older people too, you know, and you mentioned males, 80% of drownings are male. Well, sometimes I think, you know, people smile when we talk about supervising your fellow friends, your adult friends. But, you know, drowning is typically silent, and it can happen, and it does happen in the company of other people who might have no idea of the scenario that's unfolding. So when you think about the fact that 80% of drownings are male, when you think of the fact that 80% of drownings occur close to a person's home, and that 60% of them occur inland, you know, rivers and lakes, you know, quarries, that's... 80% of drownings are male, not because women are better swimmers, but because men tend to take greater physical risks. They tend to. And young men are typically trying to show what they can do, you know, at that age. And alcohol can be a factor too. It is actually in a third of drownings.
Yeah.
So when someone feels they have a reasonable swimming skill, you know, stay within your limits, you know, swim within your depth so you can put your feet down in case you get into difficulty.
Yeah, it's interesting that you say, Roger, about the inland drownings. 62% occur in rivers and lakes, and most are in the county that the casualty is from. So you're kind of dealing, I suppose, with additional hazards in rivers or lakes than you would be at the beach.
Oh, absolutely. And you see, you know, people haven't had swimming lessons since COVID, for 2 years roughly, you know, so they may think that they're competent in a swimming pool of a leisure centre, and perhaps they were, you know. Most people feel that they're competent if they can swim a couple of laps. But if you're out in inland waterways and rivers and lakes, you know, you have stronger currents there, the water's cooler under the surface than you might expect. And once your muscles begin to cool, then you don't have the same swimming ability. You need the warm muscles to swim competently. And some people, you know, you end up getting in somewhere that's quite safe to get into, but suddenly then you turn to go back, and you find that you're even against a gentle current, and that might prove a little more difficult than you expected. And then, you know, you might get to the edge, but the edge mightn't be as easy to get out, you know. So just remember, you know, don't let children, for example, wade in to retrieve things that have fallen in. These are the scenarios that we keep encountering, you know. Don't be jumping off bridges even if you see friends doing it, you know. And this thing of pushing friends into the water for a laugh, you know, that's got to stop, because you have to think about uneven surfaces. We had drownings last year due to entanglement in rivers and lakes, you know. So, you know, our water's there to be respected. And, you know, I think culturally a lot of people had an unhealthy fear of water, you know, so they ended up telling their children, you know, don't go near the water. But unfortunately, you know, that unhealthy fear means that people don't learn about the dangers. But what we need to do is have a healthy respect for all these beautiful environments that we have, and that healthy respect comes from learning. So watersafety.ie, I'd prompt anybody listening, you know, make that your port of call so that you can be safe around these rivers and lakes and beaches.
Yeah, some good advice there. As Roger said, the website is watersafety.ie. There's a whole host of information that you can read there before you go out and you know, engage in those activities on the water. And, you know, we're not saying don't do it. We'd encourage people to get out and enjoy the sunshine, but do so in a very safe and, you know, careful manner. That is Roger Sweeney, Acting CEO of Water Safety Ireland. Roger, thanks for joining us on the programme this morning, and good morning to you. Met Éireann, of course, issuing a weather advisory for hot temperatures from tomorrow, Wednesday, through to the weekend. Daytime temperatures will widely reach to the mid to high 20s, with nighttime remaining uncomfortable. Comfortably warm too. Met Éireann has warned those to stay safe in the water and take precautions to avoid heat stress and severe sunburn, and also look after pets as well. Highest temperatures today between 22 and 26 degrees.